Roger McCord on its way.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Bulldogs lead is 62-51. Here's Karnowski into the paint around Landale, and he scores. Karnowski with the answer.
And Landale just can't put up any fight. Not that he had any success slowing Big Shim down, but especially with four fouls.
Gonzaga by 13.
And Gonzaga went on to beat St. Mary's 74-64 at McKeon Pavilion Saturday night in Moraga. College game day was there. That call courtesy of the Gonzaga IMG Sports Network. I'm Andy Katz along with my co-host Seth Greenberg. And you are listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. Seth, we've got a packed show. We're going to be joined by NCAA Tournament Selection Committee Chair Mark Hollis, who's also the Michigan State AD, as well as South Carolina head coach Frank Martin. The Gamecocks rebounding off that 4 overtime loss to Alabama, knocking off Mississippi State on the road. They are tied with Kentucky and Florida atop the SEC. But let's look back at that game Saturday night, arguably the last big test for Gonzaga. You were there. You finally saw your monster masquerading as a man, or man.
Mountain masquerading as a man. He's not a monster. He had a monster game, but he's not a monster.
All right, I got to get your, it's your words. I got to get it right to quote you correctly. What were your impressions of the Zags?
They were really impressive. Maybe even more impressive defensively than offensively. They are so connected defensively. They can pressure the ball. They're active in their gaps. They close out on shooters. They don't give you a second shot. They've got a toughness about them defensively. Offensively, Shemek Karnowski in person is larger than life.
Not a monster. He's a mountain.
He's a mountain. I mean, mountains masquerade as Shemek Karnowski. I mean, he is humongous. I mean,
did you shake his hand? Because I remember when I met him earlier this season. Well, actually, last year in Japan, and then again this year.
My hand got lost.
Yeah,
but
and then the beard just makes him even more menacing.
Yeah, he could be a Major League Baseball relief pitcher with the beard.
It's very Viking-esque.
Yeah, but that's what baseball guys have. But the way they play offensively, they did a great job of playing through Karnowski, especially on that right block, and he can score it. He's a terrific passer. Again, people don't remember, but Arvydas Sabonis, when he played for the Trailblazers way back in the day, was a great passer. He's a tremendous passer. They have shot makers around him. Jonathan Williams was really good playing out of double teams when they did double him and making plays. The one concern I have for Gonzaga moving forward, and I love their team, and I love how well they trust each other and play together. I love their depth. I love their versatility. The one area that they might be void of, Andy, is they don't have a real small forward. If you look at their team, they've got depth up front. They've got very good guard play. But they really don't have a guy that's 6'6", running, jumping, athletic at it would match up, say, with
You scolded me when I
Justin
mentioned
Jackson.
You scolded me when I mentioned Zach Collins.
Well, Zach Collins is not a three-man. Zach Collins is a four-man, a high-post player, a five-man.
So Collins couldn't guard Jackson?
No, he couldn't. He'd run the floor and guard a guy like Justin Jackson. No, that's not a matchup. Now, they can do that collectively. They can play some zone. They can, Perkins has size. Nigel Williams-Goss has size. But they don't have that rocket-type athlete that has to match up with an elite big wing player. And that would be, to me, their only weakness, because they're efficient offensively. They share the ball. They can play from the block out, inside out. They can also play off high ball screens and play with great spacing because they make shots. They're bouncy enough that they can get extra possessions because they can win the rebound differential. That's probably the only thing. As I walked away, I said, now, if someone had a real – and again, then they might not have anything up front. They might not have a good point guard. But if someone had – those other pieces, like a Carolina, maybe like an Oregon, like a UCLA potentially, that would be a concern.
So I had a conversation with Mark Few on Sunday, and I threw this at him. I'm curious to get your opinion on this. Their next four games, San Francisco, Pacific, at San Diego, home BYU. Clearly, they should win all four. What do you think about this? Do you think that Mark Few should look at almost pulling a Greg Popovich and maybe resting Karnowski, who got, potential
ankle.
Right. Maybe Nigel Williams-Goss at times, who, had an injury where he didn't play against Santa Clara because of an ankle, I think
he
it was.
He will rest him, Andy.
Well, but we talked about that, and he, you know, he was thinking about, do I sit him? Do I, should I, you know, sort of almost Popovich-like, because
managed their minutes. That's
these
all.
Games in the big picture don't matter as much. They're set. What do you think?
Well,
of that?
They still got to win the games. Just manage their minutes.
But don't you think they can win these games without those guys playing major minutes?
It's not
minutes?
Like they're not practicing. If he wants to rest them, he can give them an extra day off. You know, he can give them. They play Thursday, Saturday. Give them Sunday, Monday off. Practice Tuesday, Wednesday. You give them a full day off with no basketball. Now his team, knowing his team, and he's got a team of gym rats. Watching them go through their shoot around on Friday night, they practiced in L.A. and they came in just to shoot in the pavilion, which is basically a fancy term for a big gym. But what his kids were doing was amazing. That their focus and they're wanting to get better. If they're in the gym, they're wanting to get better. To watch Nigel Williams-Goss and work on his step back, work on his post game, just with a manager throwing in a ball and how focused they were. Was really impressive watching Zach Collins, work on catching, ripping, and facing with just a manager. No coaches. No coaches were sitting down just watching. They just wanted to get him out of the hotel. Was so impressive and spoke so much to the culture. So if Huey wants to give them rest, here's what he could do. He can give them off Sunday, Monday. He can basically manage their minutes and go through a straight.
Like if they're blowing out San Francisco,
well, they're gonna manage their minutes. I mean, if they're blowing someone out. Now, San Francisco is one of the more challenging teams because of the way they play. They run a lot of that Princeton stuff. They control tempo. They have some guys who can make
or
shots.
San Diego maybe is a better example.
San Diego, who St. Mary's held to 20 something points.
Yes.
I think you can manage your team's minutes, but I also don't want to lose your edge. So there's a fine balance. I think he'll give them off more than one day. He'll give them a double day off. And I think that's a way to kind of recharge your battery, getting that hunger back. But those kids want to be in the gym. They want to play. They like, it's like they like the game of basketball, and they like being around each other. You can see it. To me, I always say culture is a feeling, not a sign. The feeling you have when you're in the gym with that team is really good. I mean, it's really good. Across the board, you can see a genuine concern and love and connection between the players. You can see the respect both ways, player, coach, coach, player. That's their approach. I walked out of the gym. I felt good about the game and their team because of the manner in which they carried themselves. So, Few you'll figure it out. He's won a couple games, you know.
Yes. It's interesting, though, they have seven more games against WCC opponents before they get to the NCAA tournament. I can almost feel like, okay, they're ready for it. Let's look back at Sunday, where there were some surprising results. First of all, Wisconsin did not play as well, but I would credit more Northwestern because they were making big shots in that game. And, you know, we've sort of been waiting for Northwestern to have one of those great wins that can maybe make them feel a little bit more comfortable. They've been dealing with a lot of injuries. They didn't have Lindsey for that game against Scotty Lindsey for that game against Wisconsin. So that's a huge win without him. What did that win at Wisconsin do for you in terms of Northwestern?
What color am I wearing today?
You're wearing purple.
Why am I wearing purple?
Because you're
officially putting them in the NCAA tournament.
Wow. They're 8-4, 19-6. They're in.
I think that unless they have an absolute collapse, they're in the NCAA tournament. So, Wilbon, get your tickets. You're right, Andy. Their game plan was terrific. You know, the first thing is Bryant McIntosh, from the first play of the game, he had his hand on the pulse of that basketball game. From the first play when he scored it. He controlled the rhythm of that game. Their defense controlled the rhythm of Wisconsin's offense. Most times Wisconsin controls the rhythm of your offense. I thought doubling Ethan Happ on the block, doubling him off the bounce, took the ball out of his hands. He had four turnovers. He's a terrific passer. It took that talent away from him. He had four assists, but the job they did on Bronson Koenig, their alertness defensively, so when they did double, that they guarded not the first pass but the second pass. And then offensively, the spacing that they played with Northwestern, because when you play Wisconsin, it's basically pack line, so they're in help. So you've got to have great spacing. And when you make that pass out of the help, those shooters have got to be shot ready, and that ball's got to go to the right guy, a shot maker, not a non-shot maker, because you make the second pass, Wisconsin can recover. The game plan defensively and offensively by Chris Collins was terrific, and you could see the emotion at the end of the game from Chris when they got that run out and got the dunk, and you know, some people say, well, you know, he should have just dribbled his clock out. And look, I understand that. Maybe of a team that hadn't been there or had been there, but they haven't been there. And that was a culmination of a great effort for a great road win. To me, it was a really cool moment. And as a coach, seeing a team's vision be realized by winning this type of game on the road in the manner in which they won it, man, I tell you, I mean, I had chills watching that because I understand the journey of getting that team who's never been to the NCAA tournament to that moment. That was very cool.
You know what? You lost the game. It's not the there are larger things in life for them to have that dunk at the end of the game. Let's look at the ACC. Virginia Tech upsets Virginia at home in double overtime. You've got a North Carolina team that now has a one-game lead over Florida State, Duke, Louisville, and Virginia in the loss column. North Carolina still has to play Duke again. They play Virginia twice. You'll be there on Saturday for college
Virginia's
game day.
Virginia's got a really tough schedule.
They have a brutal schedule because they play Duke first this week.
Three games in 7 days, basically.
Who's going to win the ACC regular season?
I think North Carolina. I thought Virginia earlier in the week, but I think North Carolina. That was a great win for Virginia Tech, coming down 14. My bigger concern is this two weekends in a row that you've seen a Virginia team have a comfortable lead and squander it. And, you know.
They were leading against Villanova, too.
They have a conundrum in that. It's a big word for me. In that, you know, Kyle Guy is really good, but he can't guard anyone. So you need him offensively, but defensively he's a liability, and that's a concern. So like as they move forward, look, people are watching tape. They're seeing, you know, their offensive lineup doesn't basically coincide with their defensive lineup. So people, you know, Tony Bennett as a coach, you've got to have to make choices. And I think that's really hard for a guy that's built his program on getting stops and defensively. Now, Virginia Tech, I thought they did a great job of spreading Virginia out, driving them, attacking matchups. And they made some timely threes. The three out of the timeout and the baseline drive, it was supposed to be a hammer play, which is basically you drive at baseline, you screen the backside of the defense, and you fan a guy to the corner for a quick three. What they did was they ran the same action, but on the drive, they had another player drift to the slot, hit the slot, and knock down the three. And it was really well executed. And then, look, you got to be lucky. I mean, London Parentes' drive, the ball ends up stopping on the back, on the rim. It stopped. He shoots this high floater, and it hits backboard, front rim, and then just, it's so soft, it stops at the basket. And, you know, arrow goes to Virginia Tech, and they take advantage of it and score. So, great win for Virginia Tech. Legal court storm. I've been part of a couple of those.
It was very organized. Cheerleaders sort of surrounded the students. They kept it very tight.
Oh, you know, Buzz Williams is a very organized guy. He even organizes his court storming. It's unbelievable.
Florida State, is this a fair assessment? I was in studio all day Saturday. I thought, and this is nothing to take away from Notre Dame, I thought they kind of looked tired. I mean, they've had such a grueling stretch over the last month. And there were a couple plays that Chris Cotter and I were looking at where Notre Dame just beat them on the offensive backboard where three Florida State guys are just sort of standing there watching. Do you think there's any truth to maybe that they could be a little fatigued over this grueling stretch?
Their schedule's been so weird. They played the six games against the top 25 teams, then they went for three in a row on the road. They survived that, and then, you know, all of a sudden they finished with four out of five on the road. So there must be something going on in their facility, which is owned by the county or the city as opposed to the university. Yeah, you can be tired. Look, you play in that league, eventually you're going to hit a roadblock. And it's not the roadblock that concerns you. It's how you handle the roadblock. You know, Notre Dame, a little bit desperate. That was the best I've seen the group of Bonzi. I mean, he's just
such a nose for the ball.
You know, he's a modern-day Adrian Dantley is what he is. And for the players, Adrian Dantley was a great Notre Dame player, played for Digger Phelps, was just a matchup nightmare. Bonzi, better rebounder, probably. But when Vastori and Matt Farrell, those guys played with a little bit better bounce. I thought that, you know, they made plays. Their spacing was good. But yeah, and I thought Florida State was disjointed offensively. Too much guys making plays off the bounce for themselves as opposed to the good of the group. But Florida State's really good. And that was a great win for Notre Dame. And the most interesting coach in the world, just when you think that he's struggling, Mike Bray finds a way to get a big-time win.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they were to lose a little bit more. Does that hurt their seeding? But I still wouldn't want to play Florida State in the NCAA tournament if they end up getting knocked
out
a couple of
times. Like, dude factor is a big thing.
They one more thing before we get to our first guest. It'll be South Carolina head coach Frank Martin. Let's stay in the SEC. You know, Kentucky, you've been very critical, constructively critical of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed with the way that they were able to win at Alabama in a game that I think in years past.
In the first half.
You know, when they go in the SEC, a lot of times that's the kind of game that they've lost on the road. What did that show you about Kentucky to win that game at Alabama?
I thought it was a good win. I mean, Alabama at times can be offensively challenged. In the first half, I thought they played with pretty good discipline defensively. I thought the second half, they let Alabama shoot, I think, 50% from the field. I mean, that goes back to that second half roadblock they have defensively where they get a comfortable lead. They were up 18. And then they finish the game. Can't do that. Can't do that. Can't get in that habit. I think he's trying to figure out his substitution pattern. I think he's making the players, he's trying to get them to play with confidence, but get them to guard defensively. A little bit better, tough environment to win. Look, Kentucky is a really good team. I haven't said that. I think that at times their effort in real, when I think of John Calipari's teams, I think of teams that check you and are physical and tough and have a harder outer shell. This team doesn't have that right now. Monk plays, and sometimes he doesn't play. He doesn't work as hard off the ball offensively. He doesn't stay with possessions defensively. De'Aaron Fox should be a dominating defensive player, a disruptive defensive player, but also a solid defensive player. He's not that all the time. Bam gets in foul trouble. You need Willis, kind of like Tony Bennett needs Kyle Guy. You need Willis, but you know he's got to show he can guard. So I think Kentucky's a good team, but we're talking, when you talk Kentucky, you're talking Final Fours and championships.
Yeah, no, and I thought that was a little unfair to you, I'll be honest. Not just because you're my
Someone
friend and co-host.
Me or something?
No, just on College Game Day, because you were talking relative to where Kentucky should be or is expected to be when you were talking about Kentucky, and I think they sort of interpreted like you were saying they weren't a good team at all. And I think you were just saying that relative to Kentucky.
And relative to who I think they are and how good they need to be, the expectation John has for them.
Right.
And I talked to John yesterday and about his team and you know the progress that his team made in that game. He was actually getting on a plane to go recruiting. And I have no problem. What I do is I look through my prism as a coach and look at a team and their potential. As a coach, you're always evaluating your team against your potential. And I try to say things that I feel that coach would want his team to hear. Because whether it's Kentucky, Duke, St. Mary's, UCI, I really don't care. So, like, to me, I have no problem telling the truth. I don't, you know, I'm not offending anyone. I'm just telling the truth of what I see from 36 years of doing this at a fairly high level. And for people to say, well, you got fired and you did this and that. No, I won 400 games at places that didn't win a lot of games. So you can take that stuff and have a good night.
Don't react to the trolls. Don't worry.
Dozier on the right baseline. Brings the dribble back out to the wing. Now skips to Notice. Three up from the left side for Dwayne, and he finally hits one. First three of the night for Dwayne Notice. For the Gamecocks, the seventh three of the night and the first in the second half. 66-64 Gamecocks.
And that call courtesy of the Gamecock IMG Sports Network. South Carolina went on to beat Mississippi State at the hump, 77-73. Now joining us here on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line, South Carolina head coach Frank Martin. I was worried that I jinxed you guys because I went on my video on ESPN.com last week and said South Carolina is the team to beat in the SEC. They're going to win the SEC, not Kentucky, not Florida. And then you had the four overtime game against Alabama. So I felt like almost personally responsible for that. So I was very pleased to see the bounce back win at Mississippi State. How critical was that for you guys to come back after that four overtime loss to Alabama with such a quality road win at Mississippi State?
Well, now that we know you're not the jinx, I'll answer your question. you know, Andy, it was great. I mean, it's league basketball in February on the road. You know, Mississippi State team that they've won 14, 15 games somewhere in there. They're so much better now than they were last year, that they were at the beginning of the season. Those freshmen have all gotten older. And after a four overtime game, the last thing you want to do is go on the road. But that's the way the schedule laid. And, just real proud of my guys. They fought their tails off. They were great in practice, and we're fortunate to figure out a way to get a win on the road.
You know, look, Alabama obviously is an improved team. They didn't play as well against Kentucky after that game. Sort of maybe they were fatigued after that. What was missing maybe in the first half against Alabama? Because you guys played very well, you know, obviously in the second half and then in those four overtimes.
Alabama's real good defensively. I mean, heck, Kentucky scored 65, 66 or something against them, after our game with Alabama. It's they're very good defensively. And once again, a team that's a lot better now than they were 6-7 weeks ago because they got so many first-year guys playing. And, they're the fourth-place team in our conference, and they're pretty good, and they just they shut us down in the first half, and we missed some open shots, but give them credit. They really guarded us, and you know, in the second half, then we played a little better offensively, gave ourselves a chance to win on two different occasions, actually three. At the end of regulation, we miss a free throw. At the end of the first overtime, we miss a dink, and at the end of the second overtime, we're up 7 with 2 to play. We just couldn't close the game out. Wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, no, I was watching it. I was agonizing with you. Sedarius Thornwell has had a phenomenal season. Obviously, he was suspended for a little bit of a spell, came back, and has been just sensational for you. When the game's on the line, what is it about him that can deliver a play, an assist, a rebound, whatever you need? What is it? How does he do it?
Well, it starts with the fact that he's a senior. He's been through it. He has seen everything. Nothing catches him off guard. And then the second part to that, being a senior, is that he's really learned how to study film. He knows where his shots are at. He knows matchups, who's good guarding what, who's not. And then he's got that confidence about him, he had it coming out of high school, but he had to learn how to win at the collegiate level. And he worked his tail off. We did some losing his first 2 years now, not a whole lot his second year, but we did a lot his first year, and he didn't like that. And give him credit. He's become an unbelievable team leader for us. He's an unbelievable young man, and I couldn't be happier for the kind of season he's having, selfishly for him. Obviously, we need him to be good for our team, and he has delivered. But for him, he was a highly recruited kid that believed in us when he could have gone to any other team in the country, and he chose to come here knowing it was going to be hard at the beginning. I'm so proud of him because of all those things I just said.
You know what's interesting to me in the off season is everyone stayed put. You know, you were able to sort of keep everyone grounded after, a season that ended a little bit disappointingly because you guys thought maybe it looked like you were going to be an NCAA tournament team, and yet you put together a very challenging schedule, and you had this group together. In those months in the off season, how did you get those guys locked in to what we're seeing now and how it's paying off?
Yeah, Andy, they actually handled things privately better than I did. The disappointment of the end of the season, which told me a lot about those guys, the kind of character that they have. They never whined. They never complained. They never asked me, Coach, why us? Why we get left out? There was a lot of pain in that locker room that day, that Sunday, almost a year ago. A lot of tears, a lot of frustration. But once we got a couple days removed from that moment, those kids were phenomenal. Their approach to each other, they basically, what they said is, hey, you know what? We killed ourselves. We lost a couple games that we should have won. Me personally, I didn't agree with them. I thought that we won enough. We set a school record for wins. We're not going backwards and rehashing all that. But I thought we'd done enough. But those kids, they basically accepted responsibility, and they approached every workout, everything, whether it's doing community service as a team, the summer trip to Costa Rica, just everything has been with a purpose to get better, with a level mindset. And I've been watching it the whole year, so I'm not surprised that after the Alabama game, they handled going on the road against Mississippi State the way they did.
Yeah, I find that interesting as well, that this is a group that hasn't been the target, if you will, in the SEC, and yet they've accepted that to where, you know what, if you beat South Carolina this season, that's a really good win. How do you think they've managed that and handled that now they've got to receive the target, not maybe as much as Kentucky because Kentucky's Kentucky, but you guys are right there. If they're one, you know, you're 1A in terms of now this is a big win if you can knock off South Carolina.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that because I was watching ESPN, your network, while I was sitting in the hotel room killing time for our game the other night, and they listed Kentucky's resume, and they showed their quality wins and did not list us as a quality win. I thought that was pretty funny. But
well, I don't know who did that. That's incorrect.
Yeah, I'm glad you said it, but that's what was the people on the show there, whatever it's called, College Game Day. That's what they talked about and they reported. I thought it was hilarious. But you see, Andy, that's what we learned last year at the end of the year. You know, we lost to Kentucky at home. That game was on February 15th. That game was for sole possession of first place in the middle of February. And then we went on the road to play at Missouri. And Missouri at home was a pretty good team. They just had a bad RPI. Our guys didn't understand that Missouri was going to line up and play because they were playing the team that was in second place at the time. And it was a great opportunity for them. And we didn't prepare well. I think our guys, and this is my feel about being around them, their mindset, their preparation for games this year, we learned that lesson last year. And I think it's something that Cindarius and Dwayne Notice and Justin Mackey and P.J. Dozier, those four guys, they have really, really put their arms around that. And they've done a lot better as far as leading this year because they experienced that last year.
So the selection committee is going to have an interesting time trying to look at your league. And we talked about this at SEC Media Day back in October. I mean, there's now at least some separation. You guys, Kentucky and Florida, are clearly the three best teams, at least you are record-wise. I think if anyone watches the league, they would agree with that. But there's a sort of a whole bunch of teams after that that are trying to fight their way, you know, into the NCAA tournament. Not that anything's given at this juncture. Since you're there day in and day out, you're playing these teams, you're preparing for these teams, what are you seeing that maybe the numbers aren't showing for some of these SEC teams?
Well, these are facts that I'm getting ready to give you.
All right.
We are the youngest conference in the country. We played more top 25 non-conference games than any Power 5 league in the country. And we played more games away from home than any non-conference games than any Power 5 league in the country. If you take those three things into consideration, playing away from home, top 25 teams, and the youngest league in the country, that means that we had a chance to lose some games as a conference in the early part of the schedule. If you hit fast forward, that's why now we go to that Big 12 challenge and we're able to win games. You see a Vanderbilt team be able to beat an Iowa State team. You saw those kind of games. Our league's gotten a lot better. The teams in our conference that were young are now old, and they're playing real, real good basketball. Look at the strength of our schedules, top to bottom in the league. You know, we as coaches, we've done everything we can to prepare our conference to be a lot better than it's been, at least in my time here.
You know, a lot of times around Selection Sunday, we'll have coaches say, well, this is a team I wouldn't want to play. Is there one of these teams in that collection of teams behind you guys in the standings that you can see is getting better and that, you know what, I don't want to play this team in March if they get in?
You're talking about our own league?
Yes, in the SEC.
Ooh, I think any of those teams, I'm not trying to hedge, Andy. I'm just telling you, I think any of those teams that are between 3 and 8, 9 in our conference, those are teams that you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's basically from Arkansas to Georgia, if people are looking at the SEC standings, that middle group.
I wouldn't want to play Georgia. They got as good a point guard as anyone in the country in J.J. Frazier. They have as good a front line guy as anyone in the country. And Maiden, Mark Fox gets no credit for the incredible job he's done at Georgia. You just said it. That's a team that maybe numbers-wise doesn't look like it belongs. Good luck, whoever has to play them.
Frank, good to hear your voice,
yes.
My friend. Good to hear your voice, my friend.
Greeny!
This team, building a program at South Carolina, you left a very successful program at Kansas State. Building a program at South Carolina, harder, easier, more rewarding. You know, what's the range of emotions as you've seen this program grow?
You know, Greeny, we kind of did the same thing at K-State now. It's, you know, I get it. Hugs got most of the credit for it, rightfully so. We don't recruit Michael Beasley and Bill Walker or Jacob Pullen without him. But that was kind of a dormant situation when we got there. And they've both been hard. They've been different, but both have been hard. I'm still in the middle of it here, so it's hard to kind of embrace. We haven't had postseason success yet here, so it's hard to gauge where we're at. But I can tell you from where we were at, you know, 5 years ago in 2012 when I showed up here in the first workout we ever had, to where we're at right now, this is what I just told Andy, I couldn't be prouder of a kid like Sendarius Thornwell. You know, and I'm not trying to single him because the Michael Carreras and the Mendogas and the Tyrone Johnsons have been phenomenal. But Sendarius was that first kid that had a chance to go to Blue Bloods and Power Five, you know, just the elite schools in the country. And he chose to believe in me. And he chose to stay here. And he chose to come here and deal with losing. I told him it's not going to be easy at the beginning. But if we work together now, we can get this done. And he believed in it. And when you take a kid like him and see where we're at as a senior now, the way he's playing, the way he's leading, and where our team's at, as a coach, it makes you feel real good.
So, Frank, you mentioned that on College Game Day that you saw that they had Kentucky's resume up and that they didn't list a quality win for Kentucky being against South Carolina.
Why are you shouting me out like that? I'm not the director
College
and
Game
the producer.
Day right here. So the question to Seth is, do you think that's a quality win for Kentucky beating South Carolina at Rupp?
Without a doubt, it's a quality win. Now, you're playing against and again, Frank understands this. You're playing against a team that plays as hard as any team in college basketball. You're playing against a team that doesn't allow you to run your offense. You're playing against a team that has won a ton of games the last 2 years, expects to win, and is at full strength with their best player back. So, yeah. Now, Andy Katz, this is what I have to deal with, Frank.
Well, no, he said he watched it on TV. He said he didn't see himself as a quality win.
I mean, my man right here just, like, threw me under the bus. The last time, I don't do graphics, Andy. I don't do graphics.
Well, no, I'm giving you a chance to tell Frank that you do think it was a quality win for Kentucky.
Well, I think it's a quality win, and going back to what you were talking to Andy about later, and I actually text Frank after that Alabama game, I was more impressed with your team. You know, you said you practiced him too hard, and I understand as coaches we sometimes take responsibility, but you could tell your team was playing for you, how hard they played to get back in that game. And, you know, let me ask you this. In today's culture of basketball in general, some people say, you know, the kids are different. But if you have a relationship with your players, you can coach them any which way you want. Try to explain your philosophy and how you coach your guys, and where the outsider might not understand that relationship and think that you're coaching your guys hard. That's how these kids understand where your heart is.
You know, Seth, kids are not different. They're no different than you and I were and Andy when we were 14, 15 years old. They're the same. What's different are the adults, what we expect from them, what we demand from them, what we the kind of responsibility that we place on them when they're young. That's what's different. Like, I'll give you a basketball example. You know, back in the day, Seth, you in the summer, you maybe played in one summer league, maybe one AAU tournament. Then you spent the rest of the summer going to camps where you did, you know, five-star Station 13 and or whatever it was, where you spent hours learning how to feed the post. You spent hours learning how to make a point to wing pass, whatever it was. And you worked on it the whole summer. So you learned to practice. I'm not saying AAU basketball is bad. I coached AAU ball. I think it's an unbelievable opportunity for kids. The difference is that they play so many games now in high school that they don't understand how to practice. They don't understand the value of practice. So now when they show up to college, you play 30 games and you practice 115 times. They don't comprehend how to deal with practice. And that's where times are different. It's not the kids. The kids are awesome. Sendarius Thornwell, he didn't understand how to practice when he got here. he knows how to practice now as a senior, and he embraces every single practice like it's his last one. That's where the difference comes, you know, and with society. You know, I say this all the time. You know, we can say, oh, we're old-timers. You know, I don't believe in social media. That's great. Then don't get mad when you can't connect with kids. I don't like social media. I think social media has become too big of a negative thing. However, I've got three young kids at home. I got a locker room full of late teenagers and early 20s. They live on social media. Technology is not going away. It's only getting bigger. We have to make sure that we understand how to communicate with our players, how to teach them utilizing every mechanism out there, because if we don't communicate with them, someone else will. And then they feel that we're only worried about basketball. And if they think that all we care about is basketball, then you can't coach them. And that's where we spend a lot of time on.
Well, Frank, we appreciate it. And I know we'll be tracking you guys throughout the last couple of weeks of the season. Hopefully you come back on the show. Is that all right?
Anytime you guys need me, you guys know you got me.
Good luck, buddy.
Appreciate it, guys.
When we come back here on Courtside, we'll be joined by NCAA Tournament Selection Committee Chair Mark Hollis. And now joining us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, Michigan State Athletic Director Mark Hollis, who happens to also be the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee Chair for the 2017 NCAA Tournament, which will crown its champion in Glendale, Arizona, could be, maybe, we'll see, one of the four teams that were tabbed as top seeds for the first time ever. The top 16 were released over the weekend. This is something that college football has done a little bit, where they've teased us each week and giving us their top four. So let's go back. I mean, they went deeper than that, but essentially that's what everyone cared about. Mark, what was the genesis of this idea to sort of give us this sneak peek as to what you guys were thinking at this moment, this snapshot in time?
Well, I think it's something that's been looked at for a couple years, but really where it came from was conversations with the NABC board, the Basketball Coaches Association, and their desire to have knowledge of where we're at in the process at this point in time. And I think, you know, transparency has always been a statement that we believe in, and bringing things forward. And this was an opportunity to put out there. I thought maybe the best thing that came out of it was an explanation of how teams are put into the bracket and what it looks like, and really give a sense of how the process works. And you know, I think the teams with 1,300 some games yet to play, the teams are going to shift around, obviously, but at least the process is fairly well known now.
So for those that didn't maybe watch you on Saturday when you unveiled this, enlighten some of our listeners. What do you think can be gleaned by, you know, seeing this top 16, you know, as to where teams are at this moment in time?
I think some of the points that came out, one, Villanova being the overall number one, now has the opportunity to request where they want to play, where they want to play in the regional, which they selected New York, where they want to play first, second round, which they selected Buffalo. You know, from there, we went down to the two line, and North Carolina was a good situation. You have Villanova in the East as the overall one. North Carolina came in as the top team on the two line. Traditionally would go to the East, but because a couple years ago we put a procedure in play where you don't have one play five, where you can move that. So North Carolina got moved to the South region to play in Memphis. Another was of the first four teams from any conference on the top four lines, they're separated. So you don't have two teams from any league. And that came into play with Virginia on the three line, having North Carolina in the South, Florida State in the Midwest, and Louisville in the East, dropped Villanova into the West region.
Dropped Virginia, you mean?
Virginia, right, into the West region. So that was, you know, some of the examples that were put forward, and maybe some understanding. I think having Louisville and Kentucky in the East region, many would say conspiracy theorist. You know, this was put together for reasons. I think as you watch the bracket, you could see, based on the seed list, this is where they drop, this is where they fall, and was explained fairly well by the group in the studio.
Yeah, I know we always do this on that Sunday, on Selection Sunday, but the odds of the 2-3 meeting, you know, are still never great. So it looks great, but to project out to that matchup in the Sweet 16, you know, it just doesn't happen statistically.
You got to play sometime anyway, right?
Right.
Keep winning, you got.
So there's a couple ones that are jumping out at me that I want to throw at you. So first of all, and I've been talking about Butler as having a great resume, and they have. And you know, to this point, before they lost on Saturday at Providence, you know, they did everything that you guys always ask. They won the games they were supposed to. You know, they won games that maybe they weren't penciled to do so. So they have a great resume. But then you take a team like Purdue, for example, and mm-hmm. Purdue – which maybe doesn't have, you know, the greatest wins to this juncture. But if you were to just match up Purdue versus Butler, you know, with sort of the eye test, for lack of a better term, you know, one would say, you know what, I would take Purdue over Butler. So in that sense, you know, where does that come in where you've got a school like Butler who's got the great resume, but then you, in a basketball sense, you know, can also look at, you know, someone like Purdue and say, you know what, I think Purdue is better. How do you balance that?
Well, very specifically with the procedures that are in place for us is we are charged with selecting the 36 best teams based upon results. So it's not the most deserving teams. It's the teams that as you look at the results, as you look at the games played, how did they perform? Where did they play? Who did they beat? Those are all factors that come into it. You know, I think when you look at Butler specifically and you look at some of those teams that for sure on the four line, maybe on the three line, you could really dig down into that next group, Creighton, Cincinnati, Purdue, Wisconsin, very interchangeable at this time. And unfortunately, we had to take, you know, head-to-head is something that's important. But in many cases, head-to-head, for example, with Oregon and Arizona, head-to-head was one game. Haven't played the full schedule yet, have games yet to play. So the ability to differentiate between razor-thin variations of these teams was extremely challenging and sometimes got skewed in a way where we knew there was only one game, but we still had to take those head-to-head into consideration. Back to your question, I think there's a lot of teams that were in that mix that are very interchangeable, and tried to make that point in the show that there's teams right behind the four line that very much could be deserving to be in there.
Mark, you guys had a meeting of the minds of the analytic, quote-unquote, gurus. From that meeting, did you guys come up with some type of kind of criteria and order that you could eventually share with coaches so that as they move forward, they know basically what is the most important thing as they put together their schedule or as they approach their season in terms of seeding and being selected?
Yeah, you know, as a former coach, that's a great question coming from you, right? It's what do I got to do to get in? What do I got to do to be seeded high? And those are difficult questions. The analytics meeting, let me be clear on one thing. That's in looking at going to the future. There won't be any changes this year. The RPI is still the sorting analytic tool that's used. The RPI is the tool that, you know, says this is a 1 to 50. What we're finding is it's an old analytic tool, and is there a better way to do it, and what is the better way? So mathematicians and people a lot smarter than me had an opportunity to come in and talk, and I think there was probably as much confusion after as there was going in, but the conversation's taken place. And I think that's what's important. When you get down to telling coaches, it still comes down to who'd you play, who'd you beat, and where'd you play them. And those are the three most important considerations. I think, you know, each committee member has an opportunity to look at things differently. I think we look at home games and what is a good win and a bad loss differently than road games. And I think, you know, the depth of teams that you would look at as a good win when you play on the road is substantially higher than at home because everyone knows how challenging, especially in conference play, it is. So those games are all looked at, but it comes down to you have to have something to sort with. We still use the RPI, but we're looking for ways to come up with barometers that potentially could give a better sorting mechanism. But in the end, it's really looking at those games, who teams played. I think when you put the team sheets in front of you, it becomes relatively clear in and going back to Andy's question of why this team and not that team as you look and answer those three questions.
How about just, I mean, and this is more just an observation. So a team that plays, like say, the ACC, even though you might not have played a difficult non-conference schedule because of the totality of their league schedule and the challenges that they face along the way at home and on the road, the old theme about, you know, well, who did you choose to play really doesn't become as much of a factor because of the totality of who you did play. Is that pretty much on the money?
Yeah, I think the most difficult process is comparing teams that have different backgrounds and different scheduling opportunities. And what I think most of us try to go for is what opportunities do teams have and what did they do with those opportunities? And unfortunately, some of those opportunities can be projected a year or two out when you're doing your scheduling and those opponents change. I think that's the case with, you know, maybe some of the games that are out there. And we as committee members individually take that into consideration. You know, you schedule a team thinking they're going to be in a certain spot on the RPI or other analytics, and they have a bad year. Well, if you get a collection of those, that can have an impact. But we take all those into consideration and look at them. And it's, you know, we went through the process in about a day and a half. When we get to New York, it's a good full week, and every game is turned over, every game is looked at and sorted, and who'd you play, where'd you play, and who'd you beat? That's kind of where it all comes down.
Yeah, and finally, obviously this was a great snapshot. It's created a tremendous amount of conversation. Did you ever think of maybe can we do this one other time, or – how about saying, all right, here are today in this moment in time, these are our last four in, last four out. Now, that would create a conversation.
That would create a conversation. And, you know, when you talk about Lenardi and others out there, that's their job. That's what they do. I don't think it's good for the committee to be in a role where we have to anticipate or project who's going to win a certain conference, who's going to win conference tournaments. And in order to get to that level of the bracketing, you have to start making those assumptions. And that's something that we didn't want to do. I told Bruce I think they ought to do it every week next year, but said that with a tongue in cheek. So it's,
one more thing before we let you go, Mark. Gonzaga, undefeated. There's never been, since you guys have been tracking this, an undefeated team that has not been a number one seed. I'm looking back to St. Joe's, Wichita State, Kentucky, that have run the regular season undefeated. They knock off St. Mary's, really strengthening their position. They've got four more games in the WCC. Where do the Zags stand on this one line, especially now, in your mind, after they knocked off St. Mary's for that sweep?
Well, again, that's not, you know, for me to decide, it's for the committee to decide.
I know, but you're one of 10. I'm just curious.
As you look at it, prior to the St. Mary's game, BYU was arguably their best road win, which is a tough game. Had good neutral wins. You know, I think Florida, Arizona, Tennessee.
Iowa State.
You take all those things into consideration. Having that road win at St. Mary's has a very positive impact. Road games are difficult, and those are things that the committee looks at, takes into consideration. And when we went through this process, we knew of the undefeated record. We did not know of the St. Mary's road win.
Right, so no, I was done before that.
Obviously, that's going to have a positive impact.
And one last quick thing on that. You know, I was looking at the miles between Spokane and Sacramento and Spokane and Salt Lake City. Now, I know their preference would be to be in Sacramento, even though it's technically a few hours further. How much do you weigh that for a number one seed if it's relatively close for one of those two first round sites?
So the only thing that's in play right now is for the overall number one seed gets that choice. And we really won't take a look at that beyond there. It's an opportunity for the overall one to kind of lay their space. And beyond that, it will be more of a regional position.
All right, Mark, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Seth. So Mark Hollis gave us a little bit of a snapshot of where the committee is at this juncture. You know, the one school I didn't ask him about, which I think is going to be one of the most interesting schools if they can just win a couple more games for the selection committee, is Indiana. And I say that, and they've got a lot of problems. We can talk about that here in a second. They still have two of the best wins in the country, okay? They knocked off Kansas on a neutral court. We were there in Honolulu. And they beat North Carolina in the ACC Big Ten Challenge game in Bloomington. They have had a ton of injuries. OG Anunoby, arguably, I think, their best talent. You know, they have two wins.
James Blackman's been hurt.
Yeah,
Colin Hartman wins
without OG, okay? They're 2-5 without him. Colin Hartman was out beginning of the season.
Brutal.
Good leader for him, for them.
Good player.
Glue guy, whatever you want to call him. So they've had massive injuries. And then Crean was very frustrated after a loss, obviously, to Michigan. And that was on Sunday, and called his team out a little bit. But he's had problems, and he's not going to maybe use all the excuses. What do you make of Indiana right now, of what Tom said, and maybe their resume?
Well, what he said was you have one shot at that, all right? You have one, you know, and don't take this phrase the wrong way. You have one bullet in terms of, like, if you're going to challenge your team, you can do it one time. You do it more than one time, and quite honestly, today, guys will probably turn you off. But he also took responsibility. He said it's his job to get them to be more mature. So, like, when everyone's going after Tom Crean, wait a second. He put it on himself when he said, it is my job to get them to grow up. I still think they're going to be in a conversation because of those two wins. Look, right now they got to win games. They got to win some games. I think he's doing a good job. Here's the problem with Tom is, and when you lose momentum, it's a hard thing to deal with. Because he's really done a good job. He inherited a tough situation. He brought stability to the program. He went to Sweet 16s. He's put guys in the NBA. He's won Big Ten championships. The sad thing is, one, when you think about Indiana, you think about skilled players and you think about tenacious defense, Bob Knight, passing, cutting. His teams are turning it over, and his teams have struggled defensively. And it infuriates, because he plays a different game, and the game is different today because of the clock and freedom of movement and everything else. And it infuriates the Indiana faithful that at times they have a mindset of outscoring people. At times they're not as committed defensively, as time as they're not as connected defensively. Now, I think they would have been a much better defensive team if Hartman was there, experienced defender. If OG was healthy, even James Blackman, who's had to deal with a bunch of injuries. I think the perception is not the reality, but unfortunately the perception has a voice, and the voice is not good. I think that if he gets this team to the NCAA tournament and they have opportunities for wins and wins that basically resonate, because, I mean, their resume is no different than a lot of other teams. This year especially, in this year's field, the only thing that's hurting them is if you don't have a bad loss. Because, like, there are teams we're talking about for NCAA tournament that haven't beaten anyone.
Yeah, I would argue that their only bad loss is the Fort Wayne one.
Yeah, Fort Wayne, in overtime.
Look, obviously losing two games in a row at home hurts them.
Hurts.
You know, Purdue and Michigan. Purdue, obviously, one of the better teams in the country. But they have opportunities. It's a brutal schedule because they finish with 4 or 5 on the road.
Backloaded
schedule. Okay? But if they were to win at Minnesota, you know, at Iowa, these are road wins, at Ohio State, maybe win 2 of those 3. I don't know. I don't think they'll win at Purdue. And they have Northwestern at home, and suddenly beating Northwestern at home would be a quality win. So they have opportunities. I think it's in front of them.
Yeah, I think it is in front of them. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, now he's got to get with his team and say, what can I do to help us better understand where we're at right now? Look, the kids are listening. They're listening to all the negativity. They're reading the newspaper. They're on Twitter. They understand what they're up against. It's not like, well, we're not thinking. No. Look, it surrounds you. I mean, whether it's you're at Indiana or whether you're at Virginia Tech, I mean, you can't put your guys in a bubble. So,
and how much of a loss is OG from your perspective?
Oh, it's huge. I mean,
he's
an elite defender. He's a tough matchup. He's a big physical. He gets to the offensive glass, and he's experienced. Look, you lose Troy Williams early. You lose the heart and soul of your team in Yogi Ferrell. You lose OG Anunoby, who some people thought was going to be an All-American this year. You lose Colin Hartman, who is your best
player. At the beginning of the season.
At the beginning of the season. All right. And then Blackman's been banged up. Man, I mean, that's a lot to replace. I mean, you can say all you want. The one concern I have for Tom's team is sometimes I think he makes it too difficult. Like, their turnovers are a byproduct of playing all those bigs away from the basket sometimes. And but they don't have a guy just to give the ball to right now. And that's the challenge as a coach.
All right, Gabe is here for Josh, and want to go to our
come.
Let's hear a little student section before we get out of here.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, Gabe.
All right, guys.
What do we got?
Our first question comes from a Sylvester Valderrama. Are bad losses with a lot of good wins worse than a team with a couple good wins and no bad losses?
Yeah, I would say that I'm more impressed if you've got some good wins and no bad losses than bad losses with just one or two great wins or good wins. What about you?
Well, you just confused me there.
So what's better for you? Have a team that's got good wins, okay, and no bad losses.
Well, that's the best scenario. Good wins and no bad losses.
Bad losses, but a couple of great wins.
I think the great wins show your potential.
Okay.
The bad losses obviously show your inconsistency. I think it really comes down to me, wins against the field. How many wins against the field do you have? If you have a good number of wins against the field, per se, as it's seeded, then I think that distinguishes you, because the whole idea is you once you get in the tournament, can you beat teams in the field? So bad losses hurt you, but I think wins against the field to me are the most important.
And one quick thing on Gonzaga. Let's not make Alonzo Trier out to, you know, Magic Johnson here. Do you put any asterisk that they beat Arizona, and Butler did as well?
BPI will put an asterisk.
Without Alonzo Trier, how do you judge those wins?
Yeah, I mean, I think I want to say an asterisk. I know the BPI, you know, which is our metrics, will take that into consideration. You know, players that are not available. But the Florida win is real. The Iowa State win is real. And Arizona still, without Trier, was playing at a high level. So let's not confuse that.
Right.
That it's not like they weren't winning games. And I mean, they were like, when Trier came back, they were like, what, 16-2 or something?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like not like they stunk or something. The win at BYU, that's the funny thing. When people like, here's the deal. This weekend we saw Providence beat Butler at home. We saw Notre Dame beat Florida State at home. All right?
Virginia Tech beat Virginia.
Virginia Tech beat Virginia. Like, I'm of the belief that Gonzaga winning at BYU, Gonzaga winning at St. Mary's, they're as good or better than any of those teams on their home court. Marriott Center's crazy. St. Mary's, you couldn't even hear yourself think. So the manner in which they won these games on the road, winning on the road is really hard against the good teams, and they're playing good teams. They are Kentucky and Duke, because every game they play on the road is the Super Bowl for their opponent, because that home game is the biggest game on that team's schedule, and yet they handle it seamlessly. I mean, it's amazing. So, you know, look. We make excuses for Florida State, you know, oh, you know, they're worn out. We make excuses for, you know, Butler. Well, you know, the Dunk's a tough place to play, and Ed Cooley does a great job, and it's a league. Well, you know what? Gonzaga doesn't need any excuses. They just go take care of business. Business.
Gabe, you got another one for us?
Yeah, our next and last of the day comes from a Scott Mooney. Who are the best players in the country that nobody is talking about?
Well, boy, I hope Marcus Keene makes the NCAA tournament. I think that'd be fun. I mean, it's going to be difficult.
Ain't happening.
I know. The MAC's not getting two bids, so, and Akron's very good.
Akron, the Zips are for real.
All right. So,
speaking of the Zips, Keith Dambright, you know what he does?
He wins.
He wins 20 games plus every year. It's almost like it's incredible what he's been able to do. And Isaiah Johnson, their big kid, is really good. And, you know, Mike Daum at South Dakota State had a big game the other day. He's a very good player.
Is he making it?
Is he making what?
I got one for you. Had a great game yesterday. I may be butchering this pronunciation. Semi Ojeleye.
Ojeleye
from
he
SMU.
It's Semi
Ojeleye.
Ojeleye.
He's averaging 18 a game for SMU as they beat Cincinnati.
He is a very good player. He, you know,
and they don't get a lot of puff.
Imagine if he was at Duke, because he transferred from Duke.
Right.
He's exactly what Duke needs. Now you put him at the four who can step out. You play Tatum at three. All right, and then you play Emile Jefferson. He's big. He's physically rebounds. He would be a very, very good player. EC Matthews at Rhode Island is a very good player, a guy that
They're going to have to win the A-10 tournament.
I think that they would have to win the A-10 tournament. And that's the problem is this year, I don't know if it's the problem, Elijah Brown from New Mexico can really score it. They're going to have to win a tournament. They're really struggling, to say the least.
How about Alec Peters? Because Valpo is probably going to make it.
Alec Peters is really good. Alec
he's averaging 23 a game.
Yeah, he's a pro. He's 6'9", hybrid forward who can score it, put it on the floor.
And they're 21-5. They probably still have to win their tournament, but
yes,
I think they will.
They would have to win their tournament.
The Horizon League.
Green Bay is always tough to play against.
All right. All right, that'll wrap up this edition of Courtside with Cats and Coach G. Gabe, where can people find our podcast?
You can find it in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, or you can subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast.
And should they compliment us? What should they do when they go to iTunes?
He's always begging for a compliment in real life as well as at the podcast.
Yeah, you can rate the show on there, and you can also leave comments. It helps other people find the show.
All right, and as always, you can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth on Hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at ESPN80Cats. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Cats and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Cats and Coach G.